Here we are again at the Warren for a Fringe review. We are meeting in the lovely sunny day now. It's kind of cleared up, and we are sitting here with Antonia from Boxtail Soup, and hopefully soon to be joined by Noel from Boxtail Soup as well. We are talking about their show Wind in the Willows and some other things. But first of all, Antonia, tell us about how you got here.
So we formed Boxtail Soup back in 2012, and it was an idea that Noel and I had while eating pizza one day. He used to be a street performer, and he used to do street shows out of a tiny little suitcase. So we decided we wanted to do theatre out of a slightly larger suitcase, and that was kind of how we very first started off. And we've always done adaptations of novels. We started off with a Jane Austen adaptation, and we brought that to Brighton Fringe. This is our sixth year here, so that was a long while ago. Brought that first show, had an audience of I think about 9 people. And but loved our experience, and then ever since then we've been creating more adaptations, mainly of classic literature.
Awesome. And right on cue, of course, the artistic director Noel Byrne here stepped in, or rather stepped over to our table here at the Warren. Noel, tell our listeners just a very brief sort of elevator speech about you and how you got here.
How I got here from the beginning, I guess. I was involved in youth theatre as a kid, and there was a particular show we did that had a little bit of circus in it, and that led me to do a bit of busking in Stratford-on-Avon, which took me down the path of becoming a street performer, basically, which was something I pursued for many years, took me all over the place. And I trained at Manchester Met to do acting, although constantly I was always doing street performing during all of that. And the company really is, for me, is where the two meet. So coming from the point of view of being able to turn up with a trunk, take everything out of the trunk, perform the show pretty much anywhere, and then kind of combining that with a bit of physical theatre and more classical acting and stuff like that.
Awesome. So what I can say, without giving away kind of, you know, your show, if people are going to come see it, is there is definitely a level of spontaneity about your work, which is sort of, I suppose, stems from some of that street entertainment. Tell us a little bit about the process of creating, you know, a family-style show as opposed to some of your other shows, you know, that like the new one that you're working on, which we're going to talk about later.
For the family shows, actually, we pretty much start from the same place as we start with the adult shows. We don't like to patronise the children when we make the show, so we start off with the source material. And The Wind in the Willows is a wonderful, wonderful book, and it's many people's favourites from childhood. And I think people, grandparents particularly, still reading it to their children today. So we start off by lifting all the dialogue out of the book, seeing what we have, and then trying to create something that, for families, I suppose, the only thing we make sure we do is we try to kind of do things in little episodes so that we're moving on to the next thing relatively quickly to keep the children interested. We make sure that there's stuff always for them to look at. We always have, now we have original music written for all of our shows by the wonderful Dan Melrose, and he wrote the score for The Wind in the Willows. And I think the music helps with the children's enjoyment of the show too. Well, everyone's enjoyment really, but it creates a lovely flow to the piece, doesn't it? And it often informs a lot of the movement and stuff that we do as well.
I think on the one hand, you have to be aware of who your audience is, but beyond that, I don't think we would treat our approach to the shows any differently because they're aimed at a younger audience. So we often get people, in fact, the show that that you would have seen the other day, somebody came out afterwards and asked me why we weren't wearing masks. And it was a woman who was there with her daughter and her daughter's kids. Her daughter and her kids all loved it. Her daughter was like, no, it was perfect, they did it. But the older woman was saying, well, yeah, wouldn't it have made it clearer for the children? Wouldn't it have made it easier for them to tell who's who and which animal is which? And similarly with a version of A Midsummer Night's Dream that we did, which we performed at the Fringe as well. People will ask us sometimes, oh, you're using the original Shakespearean language, don't you think that's a bit much? And of course, it's a matter of personal taste, but for us, if you don't challenge them, then, you know, they're never going to learn to understand that stuff. They're never going to kind of develop an interest in it. So
I think what was what was interesting about the woman who asked about the masks the other day was that in fact it was her grandchild that explained to her why that wasn't a good idea, which was really sweet. So I think there's often this misconception sometimes by adults. We think that we need to make sure that the children, you know, that we've made it clear, everything's clear and they understand it, and that we should take out any ambiguity. But actually, children are much more imaginative and resilient to things like that than we give them credit for. And with this, you know, this little grandchild explaining to her grandparent why we did it like that, I think was exactly testament to why we shouldn't patronize them, why it should be.
Yeah. If kids could read it back then, you know, why should we have to dumb it down for them now?
I think that's definitely an interesting comment to make. You know, I was about to, in fact, we can now move on to, so if you're looking at an actual sort of work of literature, like I know you guys did Northanger Abbey, especially because you use a lot of puppetry in your work, a lot of people would say, well, we can't really do an adult show like that with puppets. You know, aren't puppets for kids? And of course, there are other traditions like Bunraku and things like that, you know, that use that, certainly in Europe. But how would you say, what would you say to someone who said, oh, puppets are for kids?
I'd say you haven't seen enough puppetry. I think, you know, I think perhaps that perception comes out of the most popular mainstream culture puppetry, perhaps being the Muppets. And I think that is perhaps a little bit unfair, because I think the Muppets are absolutely for adults, and there's so much in there, in any of the stuff that they produce, that can be kind of cotton bun to barrel. But I guess if you're sort of thinking of Sesame Street and you're thinking of Muppet movies, people very quickly go, oh, well, it's kind of for children. It's a children's
movie. And then you get things like Avenue Q, so you know, you're at the other end of the spectrum, but using the same types of puppets. So, Antonio, are there any specific criteria, would you say, about adapting, you know, works of literature specifically? Obviously, if you try and, like, adapt an entire Jane Eyre, it's going to take 5 hours. So how would you find the parts which are the most important, as it were?
We decide, and it sounds kind of simple and obvious, but whose story we are going to tell. So with Northanger Abbey, it's quite a long book, really, you know, and to condense it down to as is a 70-minute show is no mean feat, really. There's a lot of characters. We very quickly decided that it's Catherine Morland's story, so everything that serves that particular story, her story, is what stays, and anything that's maybe superfluous to that will then go. And we do that with everything. We decide whose story we want to tell, and kind of what are the important parts of that person's journey, that character's journey, or that pair of characters' journeys, and we make sure that we adapt it to serve that purpose. And it tends to give us quite a good journey then through the novel, and it gives you a rough idea quite quickly of what needs to go.
So what piece of literature, what story, not an original piece here, rather something that already exists, is there one that you've always wanted to do a show of that you haven't got to yet?
Most recently, in fact, we were looking at doing something sci-fi related, and that gets a little bit more difficult because the stuff that we've adapted so far has obviously been, you know, from classic literature, and it's stuff that is generally out of copyright. Once you start talking about sci-fi, you're then talking about a quite limited field, so it gets a little bit more difficult to pick something out. And in fact, we've had a couple of conversations and email exchanges with people about work that is still in copyright. But I guess that would be the struggle that we've had most recently, is trying to find something that fits into that particular genre that is still available for us to do.
So what's next for Box Tale Soup?
Next we're currently making puppets for The Turn of the Screw, which will be on at the Underbelly in Edinburgh this August, 11 o'clock in the morning. Quick plug there. And we are very excited about doing another ghost story, because we did a ghost story a few years ago. We did the Casting the Runes, which is an M.R. James classic ghost story, and it went down very well, and it's a really interesting genre to work in. And we've written a kind of rehearsal draft of the script. We're in puppet making, set making stage, and that will premiere this year. It's the first time we've premiered a show at the Edinburgh Fringe. We've normally done a trial first here at Brighton and then potentially other venues. So we're a little bit nervous, but also very excited.
And so all the people who are kind of now hearing this and thinking, Turn of the Screw, oh God, that's a really problematic, really difficult to follow opera. What's your elevator speech about why they should come see it?
Ultimately, it's quite a simple story. I mean, once you strip all of that back, it's a story about a woman who goes to a strange house and has this kind of supernatural experience. But the real beauty of the story is in the ambiguity of never really knowing just where these ghosts lie. Are they real? Are they part of the house? Are they in her mind? Are they in the minds of the children? You know, where are they? And hopefully we can keep that ambiguity in our production. The other thing is, I think that live theatre works brilliantly for stuff like horror and for thrillers, because you get something that you can't possibly get even when you're watching a horror movie, which is that it's right there in front of you. There's no getting away from it. It's happening, you know, live in the same room.
All right, well, Noel and Antonio from Boxtel Soup, thanks for spending time with us. If you are listening to this live, then you definitely should come and see Wind in the Willows. It's their last performance here in Brighton. And most likely you won't be, though, so go to Edinburgh and see The Turn of the Screw. This is Fringery, of course, at Brighton Fringe. It's the last weekend. Go see things, support the Fringe, and find out more on fringereview.co.uk.